From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a high school classroom in Arlington, Virginia, just a few weeks ago. Teacher Patricia Hunt put together a series of lessons to help students discern real news from fake news, to put it simply. She knows there's a vital need for this. A recent study out of Stanford finds that students' ability to correctly identify real stories from fake stories is dismal, perhaps even a threat to democracy. So Patricia Hunt started with the recent story known as Pizzagate, a man driving from North Carolina to Washington, D.C. to rescue what he thought were sexually abused children. This man had come across a particularly ugly fake news story, and he believed it. As NPR reported, Patricia Hunt said to her students that day, quote, "The question I want you to be thinking about today when we do this next lesson is, why would anyone believe it?" End quote. And if we're going to withstand this deluge of fake news and learn how to sort out what is real against what is not, then it starts with students, but it affects all of us. This hour, a discussion about fake news and the value of public media in countering it. My guests include in studio the CEO of WXXI and, oh, by the way, a seasoned journalist himself, Norm Silverstein. Nice to see you here, Norm.
Glad to be here, Evan.
On the line with us is Michael Oreskes. He's the Senior Vice President of News and the Editorial Director for NPR. And Mike, you're generous with your time. Thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure. It's an important topic.
And Neil Shapiro is also on the line with us. He's the President and CEO of WNET and former President of NBC News. Neil, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Happy to join my colleagues.
Well, I think it's important to establish that fake news is not simply news people think is either wrong or news they don't agree with. And lately, we're seeing the term fake news tossed around, especially on social media, quite a bit as a kind of slur against any news story that might offend a particular political sensibility. So, Mike Oreskes, how do you define the term fake news?
Well, fake news is something intentionally created to make you believe it's journalism, but it's not. And it's can be for a political motive, which is what we used to call propaganda. It can be for a commercial motive. There are people making money by making up false stories and then collecting money on the internet from the ads that go with it. So it's very different from honest journalism, which, as we all would acknowledge, is imperfect. It's that rough first draft. Rough first drafts are never perfect. But the intent of what we do in journalism is to get you as close as we can to an honest and independent portrayal of the world as it is. The fake newster is just making stuff up for some other purpose. And it's his interest in making up fake news is not you, the listener, not you, the reader or user. It's their other motive, whatever that motive is, political or commercial.
Sure. And Mike, let me just follow that by asking you if you think the term fake news is too broad an umbrella. And by that, I mean that much of the fake news we've been examining in recent weeks really does fall more on that category of propaganda, right? And if that's the case, should we try to identify fake news more granularly, more categorically?
There are a number of people who are suggesting that we should come up with new names, not just fake news. I'm fine with coming up with some new names because I think there are several different things within the category of fake news. I haven't quite come up with them. And to be complete about it, there have been both in the last few months. There have been cases where there appear to have been people just making money on the fake news. There clearly have been some situations where possibly even state-inspired propaganda was part of fake news. And then there are people who are just doing stories that really didn't have much basis in truth, but were designed to motivate and influence politics.
Well, Neil, journalism has faced many challenges since the founding of this country, and certainly over the course of your career. Can you recall anything quite like the fake news deluge we've seen in recent weeks?
No, I haven't. And I think it's made worse or made more complicated given the changing media landscape we live in. As people have more and more choices, it's even easier both to find the news you agree with and not be challenged by anything you think is uncomfortable, and have people develop a whole ecosphere of news that they can embrace. And that's part of the reason, as Michael said, there's this commercial motive. Because it turns out a lot of these fake stories weren't written by people who had any philosophical underpinning. They were written to try to find something that would make money. And it turned out that the sort of anti-Hillary stories made more money than the anti-Trump stories. So that's why there were more of them. I think what we lack, and it's not going to change, is in a time when there were far less media choices, the role of gatekeeper was really important. And there were just three big national news networks and three nightly newses. There was a gatekeeping function associated with that. And even in my young days as a journalist, I remember people saying, I don't want to see that story on my air, and you didn't see it. And now I think nobody can say that.
And Neil really goes at a crucial point here, because the gatekeeper is now the individual citizen, the individual consumer. And I really appreciated the way you started this broadcast, because my hero is that teacher in Virginia who recognizes that at the end of all of this is the consumer of the news, the listener to the news, and that person has to adapt some of the role that we used to play as gatekeeper, as journalists.
Yeah, let me offer a little bit of hope for the listeners there. That classroom, many of the students in that classroom in Arlington, Virginia, by the end of just a lesson or two, they were much better able to figure out what they were seeing was either real or not. And so with education, with help, we can make a dent. But I want to turn to the CEO of WXXI, Norm Silverstein, who I think it was a few weeks ago, Norm came into my office and said, you know, we ought to speak a little bit more strongly about the value of public media. So if we could, I want to play a cut from a conversation that we had yesterday on this broadcast and get Norm's take on this. You're going to hear David Dunning, who is a social psychologist. He's now at the University of Michigan. He was formerly at Cornell back in 1999 when he essentially coined the term the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is getting a lot of currency, especially in this election season, recent election season. The idea of the Dunning-Kruger effect is simply that people who have very little information don't have enough information to know they don't have a lot of information. If they're ignorant, they don't have enough information to know they're ignorant, but they might be bolstered to think that they're actually an expert. And anybody who's talked to somebody during a dinner party and that person said, well, I read half an article on the Affordable Care Act, and now let me tell you which health system is best in this country, you pull your hair out thinking, why are they convinced they have all the information? Well, David Dunning says the less information you have, the more likely you are to think you really do have all the information you need. And here's what he said about how fake news weighs into this and then what we do about this.
I think it will be interesting to think about some sort of instruction, or at least to make available to people some sort of instruction of how to gather information, because there's a lot more information out there. Now the headline of the day is fake news. So I think going ahead, we're going to have to become a little bit smarter, or someone is going to have to be a little bit smarter in training people how to seek out high-quality information as opposed to low-quality information. There's simply too much out there to let people try to do it on their own.
Okay, and so, you know, Norm, we've got this classroom in Virginia. We've got teachers doing this. There are organizations that we can talk about this hour that have been doing this for a number of years, helping people educate themselves as to become better consumers. But what David Dunning is saying is it can be overwhelming, and that there has to be sort of another gatekeeper or more of a kind of a public watchdog role. What's the role of public media?
Well, the public media role has really increased in recent years as newspapers have been going out of business or shrinking. And it's really put, I think, a lot more of a challenge to us to be the place that people can turn to and can trust what they hear or what they see from. The clip you just played, I've been getting emails from professors around the area saying that there needs to be more teaching of media literacy. And I think there's a lot of truth to when you have less information that you perhaps do feel more like an expert, that you think you have all the information you need. But as Neil said earlier, the role of gatekeeper is really important. And we have to be good gatekeepers in this era of what the New York Times calls the digital virus of faking news, that we're going to have to do a better job in public media to make sure that our listeners can trust the information that we pass on.
And do you feel right now that this is a turning point moment, or is this a moment to sort of double down on the value of thorough journalism as opposed to crank something out more quickly? I mean, there's more platforms than ever, Norm, and so there's more pressure to, you know, feed the beast on Twitter and on the web, as opposed to sort of some of the old formats that a lot of us, and I'm probably the youngest in this group, grew up with in our journalism careers. But is this a moment to gear back and say, first is great, but right is the most important thing?
When I was in commercial media, it was all about being first. I think we have to take a hard look at that. And I think NPR does a good job, in particular, of letting people know that We're not going to necessarily pass on the first thing we hear. We might take a little more time to check our sources, or if we go with a big story, that it's likely to change. And that's what we're going to have to do more locally, too. So, yes, doubling down, maybe tripling down on what we do, and that's going to mean more initiative journalism from our newsroom, time for investigative journalism, and trying to make sure that we have the resources to serve this community in the way it deserves and needs to be served.
Mike Oreskes, on the point that Norm is making there, understanding maybe in a fluid news situation that, you know, things may evolve and change. I thought NPR, and I'm not just being a homer here, did a wonderful job during the situation where you had the assassination of the Russian ambassador to Turkey. NPR had kind of, I guess I'd call it a disclaimer, saying that, you know, this is a breaking news situation. Information that may come out initially could change or could eventually, you know, could be shown to be wrong. But check back here for updates. What you seem to be saying to listeners and to readers online is, in a fluid situation, the concern is getting it right, but also acknowledging when it is fluid that it might be wrong and that we will own that. And I thought that was a really remarkable, if sort of a small and hard to notice thing. To me, that was a big thing.
Yeah, thank you. And I think it really grows out of something that you at WXXI and at stations all over the country understand, which is the most important thing we have in public radio and in public media in general is our relationship to the audience, to the people that we're serving. And that is who we are. We are independent of any other obligation, but we have a very large obligation to the people who support us. And they're the ones we're doing the news for. And that makes us, I think, especially attentive to things like, we're going to give you the best job we can, but we're also going to try to be transparent. We try to be transparent when we make errors. We have an ombudsman who holds our feet to the fire on behalf of the public to make sure that we're getting it right as best we can. And in a way, most important of all, we have you. We at NPR are extremely aware of how important it is that we have a network of 264 member stations, including you there in Rochester, and how that connects us to the whole country. You know, we're not one of those coastal elite news organizations, although I guess we are here in Washington, close to the coast. But we're everywhere in the country. You know, we're in Rochester, we're in Marfa, Texas, we're in Minneapolis, we're all over the country. And it really makes a big difference in terms of how we think about news and how we think about what matters. Doesn't mean every day we make exactly the choice any particular listener would make, but it's really very much a part of our metabolism to be thinking about community, the word that you both used there. And I think that's a key part of what makes public media so valuable right now.
I see the phone ringing, and we're going to be taking listener phone calls, emails, comments, in various platforms on Twitter. You can find me at Evan Dawson. You can email the program connections@wxxi.org or edawson@wxxi.org. And it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Before I turn to our audience for their thoughts on fake news, what they expect out of journalists today, I want to ask Neil Shapiro to sort of add his thoughts to what our CEO, Norm Silverstein, was saying about how things might have changed from some of that mentality of be first to be right. And if you do see, given your background, Neil, in various places, do you see a difference between the mentalities on the commercial side and the public side?
I still think that the commercial side is, you know, still measure themselves by eyeballs. That's how they get measured. And I think public media tends to measure ourselves by hearts and souls. And, you know, can we care more about thoughts than necessarily what's going to drive a rating. And that's why you see there, you know, if you watch, so there's a story about the three biggest topics ignored by the evening news were poverty, the environment, and I think violence. Three big topics which, you know, which we talk about all the time, or education, three things we talk about all the time that didn't make its way past the horse race stories on evening news. The other thing I think is very important, and I think the thing that separates public media is context. That I think we embrace complexity. We need to keep doing a better job of that. But to remind people, you know why a little knowledge is a dangerous thing? Because then you don't realize how complex every issue is. And if you go at every issue with respect, and every person you're interviewing with respect, and try to get both sides of the story, I think you let voters truly, and viewers truly get a sense about how complex these issues are and help them to make informed decisions whoever they choose to vote for.
I think that's well said. Professor David Dunning was urging me to keep reminding our listeners after yesterday's conversation that the Dunning-Kruger effect is not designed to give you a cudgel and an argument, to throw it as someone as an epithet, saying you are uneducated, look up Dunning-Kruger. He says it's about asking all of us to think about what we know and what we don't know, and maybe factoring more humility and more of an open mind. Let me grab.
And you know, one thing I find heartening right now is that Neil's absolutely right, that focusing on loyalty and hearts and minds and focusing on the ideas is what makes us different from those who are focusing on the ratings. But one of the heartening things in the last year has been that by doing it the way we do it, and I think this is true in both public television and public radio, our ratings have gone up. So right. We're clearly creating something that's mattering to more and more people.
Okay, Norm?
And we also have a slogan here at WXXI, that at WXXI you get all sides of the story, not just the one you already happen to agree with. And sometimes that makes people unhappy, that they feel that if we're not taking a side that they already espouse, they already support, that somehow that makes us not balanced or fair. And, you know, we have to put that aside and say that we are going to give people the information they need to make a choice, to make an intelligent decision. And we need to make sure that we're not swayed by supporters, which we're not, to take any sides as we report the facts.
All right, let me go ahead and grab our first phone call because the phones are filled up. This is Miles in Rochester. Go ahead, Miles.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to weigh in on this. I think that the epidemic of fake news is just that, an epidemic. It is disturbing, to say the least. And I think that it's propagated and perpetuated by both political parties, some more than others, perhaps. I absolutely agree with the need to research and find out, the truth behind what you are reading. And I appreciate the fair and balanced approach that WXXI and NPR and PRI have on reporting. There are things that I hear on the news on XXI that really are upsetting to me, but that's because you're providing both sides of the story, and you're providing things that you know, I may not necessarily want to hear, but to be an informed consumer and an informed citizen of this country, I need to hear, and I appreciate that. And finally, you mentioned a while ago that the disclaimer about the assassination, saying this is an evolving story and that it may change, was perhaps hard to catch, and it may have been, but I want you to know that I caught it, I heard it, and I appreciated it.
Well, Miles, thank you. Yeah, Mike Oreskes, go ahead. What do you think?
Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you, Miles. It's people like you that inspire us to keep doing the job we're doing, which hasn't always been the easiest line of work in the last few years. But I think you're exactly right that by being the place where you can come for information that you can rely on, we tend to build a bigger and bigger following in the middle of everything. And that's, I think, an important thing, not just for us in public media, but the country needs that. I mean, you can't have a citizenry that isn't willing to share some kind of common base of information. You know, it was the great Pat Moynihan, who had a farm not all that far from Rochester, who used to say that everybody's entitled to their own opinions, but everybody isn't entitled to their own facts. And that's one of the things that I think has been lost in the last couple of years, that somehow agreeing on a common basis of what's factual before we even get into the arguments about what we should do is central to having a coherent country.
Norm, you want to weigh in too there?
Well, I agree with what Michael just said, and I really appreciate the fact that under Michael's leadership, NPR has been working more and more with local stations like WXXI, providing additional training, editorial support, and that we've been able to be part of the solution of resources by having our reporters on NPR and also on the PBS NewsHour. Neil's station produces the weekend PBS NewsHour. and that we need to do more of that. That's one way around the limitation on resources, is to take advantage of the network of public radio and public television stations across the country that have solid newsrooms like WXXI, and to add to the discourse and to make sure that we've got enough people out there covering the stories and getting the facts and doing the kind of news in depth with, as you heard earlier, explanation of what's going on and not just what's happening, but why it's happening.
And before I get back to your phone calls, Neil Shapiro, and by the way, listeners, you're hearing Norm Silverstein. You know his voice in studio, the CEO of WXXI. Neil Shapiro's on the line with us. He's the president and CEO of WNET, and Mike Oreskes is the senior vice president of news and the editorial director for NPR. And we're talking about fake news, the value of real journalism, and the role of public media going forward this hour. And, you know, Neil, Mike brought up the fact that maybe in this recent election, the fake newsers viewed the anti-Clinton stories as more profitable or, you know, sort of would gain more momentum and shares and clicks online. But this, I think, affects all backgrounds. And the example that I'm thinking of right now, I don't actually know if this is a fake news story, but last night I saw a number of people sharing a Facebook page with the names blotted out of a guy who was complaining that or celebrating that, quote, Obamacare is about to be repealed. And a friend on his Facebook page says, don't you get your insurance through Obamacare? And he says, no, I've got my insurance through the ACA. And the ACA is what was created when Obamacare crashed and burned. And so let's get rid of Obamacare. And so I think a lot of people who are sort of pro-ACA saw that, and it was shared in a number of sites, and you see it in a lot of social media, and there's this confirmation bias, this motivated reasoning that says, this must be real, I must share this. And my first reaction was to say, is this propaganda? Did somebody actually say this? I'm not saying it's impossible someone would say it, but I didn't see a lot of people asking themselves, do I really want this to be true, and is that why I'm sharing it, or is it actually true? And that's kind of what concerns me, is the motivated reasoning to share certain things without asking if it's fake news.
I think that's why one of the callers said this epidemic of fake news, it's not going to go away. It's not going away because if everybody's a gatekeeper, people enjoy spreading things if it enforces their point of view, even if it isn't necessarily true. It doesn't bother them. So one of the challenges for newsrooms is, I think, this: at what point do you have to take something? You know, we've talked about this in our newsroom. At some point, do you take a story which say this is not true? We're going to tell you the story is not true, because it's around so much, people are talking about it. And we may even tell you why or how it got in the ecosphere, which is something we would never do before. But I think it may be the two things that journalists may have to do now is, one is actually call out stories that are circulating around and say, you may have heard this, it has a lot of traction, it isn't true. And the other thing, I think, is to call out politicians and leaders more often when they say things which aren't true. I think this last campaign, where there were a lot of that, we used to think if we would just say it once, or we had fact-checking teams or truth squads at all various media, and someone would give a speech and we would say, or a debate, and we'd say, these things are right and these things are wrong, and we'd say, we've done our duty. And that assumed that it wouldn't happen again. But now, since half-truths or lies are often said over and over again, I think you're seeing the media being a little more aggressive about that and calling it out when it isn't true. So, you know, there are a lot of examples, but when the president-elect said that he won one of the biggest electoral landslides ever, that factually is not true.
Right.
But Neil, there, Evan, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
No, Evan, I was just going to add, I think what Neil says is absolutely true, and it does actually go to the way we operate as newsrooms and as journalists. And one other thing, which is right at the heart of what you were just talking about, you mentioned Facebook. The platforms that now distribute much of our news, in other words, right now, the people of Rochester are listening to this conversation on a platform, kind of a old-fashioned platform called radio. And we love radio, and we like this intimate conversation. But a lot of people now get their news in their Facebook feed, in their Twitter feed. They get it by searching through Google. And this has created a real change in the way people see what they're getting. And it's frankly made it a lot harder to distinguish. They don't necessarily know where it's coming from. You have to do more work to understand it. And this has created some real issues. And one of the things we've been pressing as journalists is for the big companies, the big tech companies like Facebook and Google and Twitter, to take more responsibility for the way in which their distribution of news through their own platforms affects the way the news is actually received. And I think there's some signs that they're beginning to understand this and see that the way they operate actually is part of the challenge.
Facebook's talking about developing algorithms to try to identify fake news sources, watching for the repeat of certain phrases, and I think that's a good start, but this needs to go on all of the responsible platforms, Twitter, everything that people are going to find their news.
Right.
Let me get back to the phones because they're filled up here. Ray in Rochester is next. Go ahead, Ray.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I have one comment, which is I think that, you know, fake news is an issue, but I really think that the real issue is legitimacy. And that really comes from looking in the mirror and seeing what's there. And I think that, you know, the media everywhere now is biased one way or another, and that's certainly the perception. I think that to really make your point, I think it's very important that you really strive to be as completely fair and balanced as you can. And I would assert to you that, on the national level anyway, that NPR is really not that balanced. And yeah, I think at the local level, WXXI is great. Evan runs a great show. But I would really encourage you, if you look at the content and sort of the slant that comes across, I think you're kind of kidding yourself if you think that you're not that biased
level.
And I would love to see a greater degree of balance there, because that's what gives you the legitimacy that you want and the goal that you're trying to reach.
Ray, what do you think is lacking? Before Mike jumps in, because I know he's going to want to address this, but what do you think is lacking, Ray?
Well, I think, you know, I've been a listener for 20 years, and I've been a donor in the past, and I've stopped because I just find that there's almost nowhere where you can get an even slant. So, you know, and I don't want to pick on people, but I listen to Steve Inskeep a lot when he does, you know, presidential interviews. There's no question who he's liked in the last three elections. I mean, there's absolutely no question. And I think that that's one example, and I think when you look at some of the commentators that you have at the national level, there's absolutely no doubt where their sympathies are. And, you know, and everybody's human, but I really think you could do a better job of balancing that out. And I think that's what most people really want. I think it's true your ratings are going up, but I think the majority of people, and your ratings will be even higher if you can really stay balanced.
Okay, Ray, stay on the line. Mike Oreskes from NPR, go ahead.
Well, Ray, thank you, and thanks for the tone of it, because I think these are the kinds of conversations we should have. I don't hear you yelling at us. I hear you making an honest critique, and that's fair. First of all, I agree completely. I wouldn't have used the word legitimacy. I would use the word trust, but I think we're really talking about the same thing, which is our work has to earn your trust. That's the relationship. And we have to do a lot of things to earn that trust. We have to be honest. We have to be independent. We have to be transparent about what we do. And we have to be fair-minded. And I'm acutely aware of this critique of NPR. I've only been here a year and a half. I'm determined that as time goes forward, everybody will understand, I hope, that that is not, certainly not what we're attempting to do. And in those places where we do slip up, where we, if we do make a mistake or lean one way or the other, we're determined to correct it or to seek a better balance or a broader range of points of view. You know, we've been quite alert to this over the last year. You know, one of the people I'm proudest of in our reporting firmament is a young woman named Sarah McCammon, who is from an evangelical family and has grown up in public radio and did, I thought, a wonderful and fair-minded job of covering the evangelical movement and their interaction with the Trump campaign, which was quite fascinating because in many ways they really couldn't understand Donald Trump, this New York real estate guy. Yet at another level, he seemed like their best candidate. And she really understood it because she really came from that world. And I do think it's important for us to be sure that we have journalists from a wide range of points of view. So I'm sorry that Steve Inskeep hasn't lived up to what you would hope for him. I don't hear him the same way. I hear him as a pretty tough interviewer who, and you know, that he challenges candidates of all sides. I know for a fact that he's reached out to Donald Trump and invited him to Morning Edition. And I hope that at some point when the president-elect sees it as appropriate, he'll come on NPR and talk to us about the country and about his plans. But it's a fair enough point, and we count on people like you, the loyal people who believe in what we believe, to make sure we deliver a new service that meets your expectations.
All right, Ray, one quick follow if you want. Go ahead.
Well, I think that's a great point. And like I say, one of the, and I say this to everybody that I work with, I think the hardest thing we do every day is look in the mirror and try to see who's there. And, you know, and I applaud you for doing that. I think, you know, you're not going to find many news organizations that are attempting to do what you do, but I think if you're going to do it, then I think you really have to be serious about that and be objective about that. And I'll be honest, I really don't think you're there yet. I think it's actually not even that close yet, but I think you're trying, and my hat is off to you, and I wish you success, and I will be listening. And like I said, I would love to hear more of that balance, and my dollars will flow when that happens, like they did before.
Well, thanks,
Ray. So I
won't
stay on the air, but I want to say thank you for taking the call, and I wish you well.
Ray, call anytime, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, we appreciate that, too. And, you know, one thing I would say is that when I was a reporter, people used to say, well, if you get complaints from both sides, you probably covered the story right. I always believed if I got a note or a phone call from both sides saying you treated it fairly, then I felt we did the story right, and that's what we aim for here. We're not looking to make people mad on both sides to prove that we're objective. We want people to say, well, I might not have agreed with everything you said, but that you gave me a fair shake, and that's the important thing, that people feel that they were heard, they were respected, and we covered both sides or more of the story.
Amen. Yeah, amen to that.
Yeah, I've got emails and others on the line. In fact, Jeremy in Penfield, we'll get to you coming up here because I know you feel quite differently, and that's fair. I mean, we want to entertain all points of view here. We're talking about fake news, and Neil Shapiro's time's a little short here, so we're going to turn the floor over to Neil before he's got to get going here for some final thoughts on where you think journalism is heading here. And I asked Norm Silverstein, Neil, earlier this hour, if this is sort of a moment to reassess, to double down on the value of getting it right and not necessarily getting it first. But, you know, when listeners like Ray are asking us all to reassess, I want to ask you, Neil, what you think we can do better and what do you think we will do better in 2017?
Well, I think we always have to strive to do better, to see all points of view. And I think with a country as polarized as it is, the most polarized I've known it in my journalistic career, I think the challenge is on us to provide context for big issues and to try to find the reasonable arguments on all points of view. I think increasingly people are pulled to one side, left or right, red or blue, and I believe that there should be at least common grounds of discussion. And I think that's what public media can be. We're about light, not heat. I think that's one of our big challenges, but also I think it's our big opportunity. If you watched any of cable news in this last race, it was all about heat. It was all about who could scream louder. And I think we can try to play to a place where people from all points of view can be calm and have reasonable discussions. And we have to make sure that we reach out to both sides. And sometimes if one side is extremely polarized, we still have to find people to play with us. Because I still think at the end of the day, the success of our democracy is about an informed electorate. And that only happens if people are open to all points of view, including points of view they don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah,
that's what this show is all about, trying to have a civil discussion and giving people an opportunity to express themselves, and not in a way where people are yelled at or where people are put down. But people hear, you know, we feel that the most important thing we do is respect our listeners.
Yeah, and Neil, on that note, you know, Norm's right. There are moments where you've got listeners, people on all sides, who want journalists to sort of take a bat to their political opposition and want to use some really strong language. And there are also times where, you know, journalists get kind of mocked at times for what people call false equivalency, to bend over backwards to present this notion of balance when that is not deserved. So last question for you, Neil, and then I'll let you go. How do you sort of divide that line between this is the balance that is deserved for the story versus this is just us working too hard to find equivalency? We don't want false equivalency, particularly when the facts, you know, are pretty clear.
I think there's some things, there's some issues when it's clear. You know, I think if I look at issues of poverty, right, there's nobody who's for poverty. I think we can agree as a society that there are goals that we all agree and all share, and I think that those don't need pros and cons. And I think there's some issues where there's overwhelming scientific evidence, like that there's some kind of climate change happening, is agreed to by 99.9999% of scientists. And I think that doesn't mean every story you have to have a pro and con, or every story should be 50-50. It doesn't mean every once in a great while it's worth having some of those people in the 0.001% to hear their point of view. But our coverage should reflect the overwhelming scientific point of view. And I think that's how we need to look at it.
Neil, thanks so much for your time this hour. Greatly appreciated.
All right. Great talking to you. Join my colleagues, and thanks everybody in Rochester.
All right. Neil Shapiro is president and CEO of WNET, former president of NBC News. He is heading off, but Norm Silberstein remains with me, the CEO of WXXI, and Michael Oreskes is the senior vice president of news and the editorial director for NPR. This is our only break of the hour. We come back to your phone calls on the subject of fake news and the future of journalism next. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So our second hour coming up here, we're going to be talking to Karen DeWitt, the Capitol Bureau correspondent for WXXI. We are covering Governor Andrew Cuomo's regional state of the state addresses from a wide range of issues, free college tuition. The New York Times is speculating that this is a sort of test run for a presidential campaign. We'll talk about taxes, photonics, the economy, and more next hour. Okay.
By the way, can I just say yes. Something promotional for WXXI?
Well, you know, I suppose.
There is almost nothing more important that public media can be doing right now than keeping a close eye on state governments around the country. It is, and I'm so happy to hear my friend Karen DeWitt taking on this role on your behalf, because there's so many important decisions being made in state capitals right now. And we at NPR have committed ourselves to working with stations across the country to try to strengthen local coverage, local government coverage across the country. And that's the kind of thing that I think we're really talking about when we talk about the importance of public media now. It's that we have the tools to do this, and we can support that kind of work. And so, you know, it's not a little thing that Karen is keeping an eye on the government in Albany, and that we shouldn't skip lightly over how important that is.
Well, thank you. I know we appreciate that and the work that Karen does, and our listeners do as well. Listeners, every line's filled up. Let's get as many phone calls as we can in. A number of people want to weigh in on sort of perceived bias, which I think is fair, because the question on how to deal with fake news, I think you're going to do a better job dealing with fake news if the public feels that they can trust news organizations. And so that's fair, but I do want to kind of stay on topic as best we can. Roger via email says, Evan, too much self-congratulation. NPR and PBS coverage of climate change is lacking. NPR and PBS coverage of the Clinton campaign were far too focused on emails. That's from Roger. And Jeremy in Penfield wants to weigh in on sort of that question on liberal bias or biases as well. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
First, I want to echo what the former caller said about your lack of bias locally. I don't see that at all. But in terms of speaking on a national level, I think he said, and I'm paraphrasing, I think he said that NPR, he intimated that NPR has a liberal bias and that the coverage of the presidential election, it wasn't even close in terms of who was favored, et cetera. My issue with his stance is that, first of all, he used the phrase fair and balanced. We all know where that comes from. I'm old enough to remember a time when there wasn't even a Fox News station, and that really, you know, that's a phrase wasn't even used in public discourse. No one knew what it meant, or no one used it. So this discussion about bias has been going on for a while, and I kind of look for it as I listen to different outlets. If, you know, if I want to hear what the left has to say, I go on and listen to MSNBC and Rachel Maddow. If I want to hear what the extreme right has to say, I'll turn on Fox News, although I can't stand it for very long. I have to tell you, I listen to NPR because when you ask questions, you actually listen to people's answers, and it doesn't matter who they are. I can't say the same thing is true for people who claim to be fair and balanced. And that's really all I want to say. I don't see any bias from NPR on a national level. I see them asking questions and listening to answers. I don't hear them editorializing afterward. MSNBC with Rachel Maddow, sure, that's entertainment. They're making money there somehow. But with NPR, that's completely unfair. And I think we really have to be careful in allowing the right to try and identify or to try and label NPR for NPR. They've been doing it for a long time by claiming that every other media outlet that does not buy into their own extreme right-wing view is drive-by media or, you know, the liberal media. And that just isn't the case. That's all I have to say.
Jeremy,
thanks for having me on.
Thanks for the phone call, Jeremy. I appreciate that. Mike Oreskes, you want to weigh in there?
Well, thank you. And that was a pretty good slogan I'd like to adopt. We listen to the answers. That is our aspiration, which is to listen to all the points of view and to try to empathize and understand and share them with our listeners and not to adopt any particular point of view. So, you know, I'm happy that you feel at least we're fulfilling your desires for fair-minded news.
On the subject of fake news, Robert in Fairport wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think the tough thing here is that one thing you discover when you research things is you have to determine who's paying for it. And I think with public radio, one thing I think that there's a weakness there is that the funding sources are not always disclosed. I mean, if you look at WXXI, about a third of the funding stream is from direct government grants. So I'm suspicious of a public, public media having that much of an appetite to, look very deeply into how government spends money when they're getting the money to operate from government.
Robert, I think that's a fair point to raise, and I know Norm Silverstein wants to weigh in on that. Why don't you stay there, Robert, and go ahead, Norm.
Actually, a third of our funding comes directly from people just like you, from membership. That's our biggest source of funding, and about half of the radio budget directly comes from membership contributions. Overall, the station gets about 25% of its funding from government. That includes both state support for educational services and what we get from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And radio, actually, it's very little direct federal funding compared to television. TV gets 75% of the national appropriation, radio 25%. And in both cases, funding goes directly to local stations based on a formula, which is developed by how much you raise privately, because that's what CPB encourages stations to do, to raise money from their community. So I don't think you have to feel that that we're overly beholden to government funding. It's just not the case.
And Robert, let me also add, as someone who my job entails interviewing political leaders, candidates from all backgrounds, I will just say that I think we would be happy to have the public decide if we're doing a good enough job with that. That are we asking the appropriate questions? Are we not? Do we appear to be softballing at times? And I think the record is pretty good, but I think it's important for me to at least direct back to you and the listeners how you feel. Norm, you want to weigh in that too before we go?
I would just note that December was the best month we ever had in private fundraising at WXXI in our 50-year history.
All right, very good. But Robert, but I do take the point. I mean, I think you're raising a question that's fair. Then I would ask you, do you feel that something is lacking in the way we cover the news?
Well, I think that a lot of the topics tend to be repeated on a regular basis, things like global warming and things of that nature. I don't know. It's just that if you look at the numbers themselves, they're quite significant. I mean, you're looking at a 990 form that has $3.5 million in government grants versus $3.2 million in membership dues. That's pretty significant. Whenever I hear this disclaimer that it's listener supported, I almost feel like there should be a second disclaimer that says it's also taxpayer supported.
All right, Robert, I think that's, you're certainly, well in line to feel that way, and I appreciate the phone call. They're the current governor. Next hour, we're covering the state of the state. He has never come on this program. He does a few interviews occasionally on longer form with Susan Arbetter in different formats, but not here. There are some political leaders from backgrounds that don't come on here. Some have come on here and don't come back. But I hope that the track record supports that what we're doing is not beholden to that. But certainly, Robert, we have to leave that for you to decide. Mike, how do you feel about some of that concern on the national level?
Well, I think it's a completely valid discussion where the government funding should be, how much of it there should be, if any. I will say this. I've worked in a lot of newsrooms over my long career, including a good piece of it in Albany. And I've never seen a news institution do as good a job as public radio does of insulating the journalists from the financial discussions. So whether the money's coming from funders or sponsors or from taxpayers, and it comes, of course, some of it comes from all three, I think the sources of funding are very diverse, and the newsrooms are really told to do their jobs, not to be beholden to any of the funders. By the way, including, as you were saying earlier, including our listeners. Our job is to serve you, but that doesn't mean to pander to you. So I think that, in fact, this is a very good structure. And the diversity of the sources of money is actually part of what makes public media as independent as it is. And I think that's a very good thing. And frankly, you know, from my friends at the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle and in newspapers all over the country, their situation right now is that they only wish that they had the diversity of funding sources that we have. But if the public doesn't believe the taxpayer money should flow to public media, that's the public's right to make that decision. It's not our decision.
And just quickly, when I was new in this job, I got a check for $2,000 from someone who said he wanted to be on the talk show. And I wrote him a nice note back saying, if your topic is something we're interested in, we're happy to have you on. And the check went right back to him. And I made a copy of it and showed it to our board. And they said that was exactly the right thing to do. We will not take any kind of gifts or grants to allow people to use our airwaves for any private purpose.
Well, and I think that story is repeated across public radio every day. People are told, you know, we're happy to have your support, but your support doesn't get you anything other than the good feeling of supporting an important institution for the country.
Let's get back in the last few minutes to fake news. Paula writes to the program and says, Evan, would it not solve our fake news problem if the person delivering the fake news could be sued for libel? That's from Paula. Mike Oreskes?
Well, it's an interesting challenge. Now, if you knew who they were and can find them and can pin them down, you actually could sue them. Libel is not about whether you're a fake news organization or a real news organization. Libel is about what you publish. I think a lot of the problem is a business problem, which is that many of these fake news sites come and go so quickly that it would be very hard to track down who's responsible. And that is one of the things you get with your community radio station or your local newspaper, which is it's an institution. You know who they are. You know how to find them. You know how to get on the phone with them, as we've done in this last hour, and argue with them. And that is something that you get from real news organizations versus these other come-and-go institutions. So the problem isn't actually the libel law itself. The problem is tracking down who's done this work.
Yeah, and Paul, I would also say it's also about proving harm to win cases like that. And while I understand the sentiment of your email, the notion of sort of a wave of litigious approaches to fake news, to me, strikes me as less efficient than simply better educating the public on how to understand what news is real and what is not. Benjamin on Twitter says, how about the fact that Trump creates fake news? He consistently states false information, which many of these stories run with. Benjamin, I would say, and we'll see what Mike and Norm say, the idea of creating fake news, again, fake news as a category more refers to stories that are outright false, created to look like packaged real news, as opposed to someone stating a falsehood and hoping a real organization will run with it. Mike Oreskes, what would you say to Benjamin?
Yeah, no, I think that Neil Shapiro actually addressed this a bit earlier, which is we see more and more in political settings candidates and government officials being willing to simply say things, whether they're true or not. And I do think that's putting greater pressure on us in journalism to figure out ways to communicate that this is not true, this is false, and to do it often enough and close enough to the actual statement so that it serves a purpose. I think our old model was we would publish an article that told the full story of some fact or some situation, but we wouldn't necessarily always tie it back to every repetition. And increasingly, I think we need to find ways to do that. We were very pleased, and we got a lot of very good support from the public by this new way in which we created fact-checking during the campaign.
Yeah.
It was something invented here by one of our young and very digitally savvy visual people who figured out how we could put our annotations of what was accurate or not accurate right on top of a transcript. So we're going to use that technique now for lots of things. In fact, in a number of states in the next couple of weeks, member stations are going to use it to fact check the state of the state message from the governor. You can use it to do a presidential press conference or a speech, and we're going to do that. And the good thing about that is it gives you the information right there.
Well, that's a great way to end there. From Mike Oreskes and Norm, 20 seconds, final thoughts from you?
We just really appreciated the fact-checking site from NPR. We had direct links from the WXXI website, and we had terrific feedback on it, so keep it up.
And let me just again state to the many emailers and callers who couldn't get through, we are trying to be self-reflective and not too self-congratulatory and look in the mirror as you've asked us to do and continue to try to get better. But it starts with getting it right first of all, not necessarily getting it first.
Norm. And if you don't see me at the supermarket with your opinion, email me at norms, N-O-R-M-S at WXXI.org, and I will get back to you.
Thank you for being here, boss. We'll see you down the hall. And Mike Oreskes from NPR, our great pleasure. Mike, thanks for what you do, and thanks for the time.
My pleasure, and thanks to WXXI and all the listeners.
You got it. Short break. More Connections next.